Welcome to the Pacey Performance Podcast. Today, I'm speaking with performance coach and owner of the McCaw Method, Alistair McCaw. This episode of the Pacey Performance Podcast is sponsored by Val Performance, the team behind the Nordboard hamstring testing system. So the Nordboard is the fastest and easiest, most accurate way to measure hamstring strength. So with the Nordboard, you'll get the right information to make the right decisions at the right time. If you want to check them out, you can check them out at valdperformance.com. This episode of the Pacey Performance Podcast is sponsored by Train With Push, creators of the Push Band. So the Push Band is the first scientifically validated wearable device to provide objective insights into your performance in the gym. So using accelerometers and a gyroscope, the Push Band is able to use bar speed to regulate load and volume based on your ability in the gym on any given day. So you can use the Push Band to quickly establish 1RMs with submaximal load so you can plan with confidence. So the Push Band portal also allows you to create programs before entering the gym to make change on the fly depending on how you are performing on that given day. So you can customize everything from target velocity ranges to differentiating velocities for warm-up and creating working sets and supersets for yourself or your athletes. So if you do want to know more about Train With Push and the Push Band, get yourself over to trainwithpush.com. They also got a great blog, so you can catch up with some guest bloggers such as Mladen Ivanovic and Dan Baker. So be sure to check them out at trainwithpush.com. Hi guys, thanks for tuning in to episode 90 of the Pacey Performance Podcast. So today we've got a part two with Alistair McCaw. So after part one, I chatted with Alistair on the episode and off air about his new book that he was going to bring out. And I said that because the episode had gone down so well, we'd get him back on when the book was released and have a little chat about it. So this episode is all about, well, it's about the book, but we kind of dig a little bit deeper into some of the chapters that Alistair dives into. So he was kind enough to send me a book. It's called 7 Keys to Being a Great Coach. All the links to where you can get the book, and I would highly recommend it. I read it over the last couple of weeks prior to this episode. International buyers can get it on Amazon, and US buyers can get it from Alistair's website, McCaw Method. So what we also discussed in the episode was to give a giveaway. So on the tweet that I put out for this episode, if you just hashtag McCaw Method book below, that will put you into a draw, which is going to be picked out by Alistair 2 weeks after the launch of this episode. This episode will go live on the 23rd of June, so it'll run for 2 weeks. So all those that put hashtag McCaw Method book will be entered into the draw, and Alistair will pick it a couple weeks later. So I hope you enjoy the chat with Alistair. But just before, one last thing before I let you go, I just wanted to let you know about Dan Baker's tour of the US, which is being presented by Train With Push. And just to let you know of the dates and locations, if you are wanting to see Dan speak, which I would highly recommend, it'll be definitely worth your time. So they're at the Athletic Lab, which is Mike Young's place, on July 9th, at Northeastern University on July 15th, Northwestern University on July 17th, and Texas A&M on July 23rd. So if you are interested in going to one of them spots to see Dan speak, I'll put a link on the site. So it'll be paceyperformance.co.uk/90, and I'd definitely recommend it. So I hope you enjoy the chat with Alistair. Again, would love your feedback, and I'll chat to you soon. Hi guys, thanks for tuning in to the Pacey Performance Podcast. So we have another part two, and this time with Alistair McCaw. So welcome to the podcast, Alistair.
Thanks, Rob. Great to be back.
Pleasure. So anyone that didn't listen to your part one, do you just want to give us a little bit of information on who Alistair McCaw is?
I'm a sports performance coach. I'm based in Tampa, Florida. I work with a variety of athletes. I also do coach education, so I work together with coaches in some of the universities and sports programs here in the United States, as well as in Europe as well. 22 years experience in coaching, and I'm a very avid marathon runner myself.
Nice. So you've done more than just marathons though, yeah?
Yeah, duathlon, triathlon, I've a lot of endurance sports, was brought up in South Africa where, you know, we enjoyed the outdoors and enjoyed just getting out there in the weekends and just going for long rides and runs. And I think that's all part of the culture there. Mm-hmm.
So what are you doing at the minute?
Well, just preparing. This weekend I'm leaving for Dublin and UK, Dublin and London, sorry. I've got a few seminars coming up in Dublin. I coaches one. I've got a parents and an athlete motivation workshop there. And then I'm going to be the keynote speaker at the LTA. That's the nice. British Tennis Federation. On the weekend before Wimbledon starts. So a lot of fun activities and exciting things coming up.
So do you know the dates when you're in these different places?
Yes, speaking at the David Lloyd in Dublin on Monday the 18th and 19th. And then I'll be in the National Training Center in London. I know it's a big place, but wherever that is, I think it's Roehampton.
Yeah,
That's on the Saturday. I'll be speaking on the Saturday, and I'll be speaking again, doing a coach's workshop for the actual LTA on the Monday. And also in the pipeline is possibly a strength and conditioning workshop at St. Mary's on the Tuesday. I think that's the 28th, if I'm not wrong.
Of June.
Correct.
Ah, so is the St. Mary's one with their master's students?
No. This is being held in conjunction with Creating Athletes.
Ah, so okay. Okay.
Pretty excited about that one.
Yeah, so great facility at St. Mary's. Fantastic facility.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, it's a great facility. So you've been busy on another little project on the book. So you just want to tell us a little bit about, firstly, why, and maybe a little bit more in depth about actually the what.
Well, I think, you know, and that's a great question. It all starts with why, doesn't it? So, I'd always wanted to write a book, and I always wanted to share my experiences. And, you know, a lot of people had always asked me why I hadn't written a book yet. And I always felt the time wasn't right, you know, because I'd always think, well, you know, it's maybe I don't have enough experience, and maybe I don't have enough know-how to write a good book, because I want it perfect in a way, you know what I mean? You want that's your finished product, that's your baby, if you like. So, but I was flying back from Australia in January, and I was on the plane, and I was thinking to myself, you know what? Maybe the time will never be just right, and you know. I might as well do it now. So 33,000 feet up, I started writing the book and sharing my experiences, and that's how it came to be. And, you know, in this book, I wanted a book that was a combination of my experiences in coaching myself, as I've worked with numerous teams of, you know, from rugby, cricket, hockey. I've worked in individual sports. Tennis, golfers, squash players, you name it. And being in the strength and conditioning industry, or shall we call it athletic development, which is maybe a better word, it's a very, very privileged position, because you're working together with different coaches in different sports. So you're able to collect all these experiences of working with a multitude of coaches in different sports. And all those different sports bring a different culture as well. So that was fascinating to look into and share my experiences from. And then, I mean, I'm going to be the first guy to say this. I'm not the smartest guy out there. I mean, there's a whole load of smarter coaches and trainers out there. I can just think offhand of Mike Boyle and David Joyce and Nick Winkelmann. And, you know, sometimes when I listen to these guys or I read something of them, I'm like, wow, I mean, I'm completely lost. This, you know, these guys are just another level. And I was speaking to Nick last weekend in Orlando. I mean, he's just – the guy is just so smart. He's just an amazing coach and an even better person. But I wanted to bring out a book that was pretty simple. And with that, just give what I felt were the 7 most important things in being a great coach. And because, I mean, there's loads of things that you need to be a great coach. And here's the thing is that we don't all have them. I've never met a great coach that had everything. So it comes down to maximizing what you've got, your strengths. Maybe you're a great motivator. Go all in. Maybe you're a very smart, educated guy. Go all in. You've got to use your strengths, and that's one of the key things in being a great coach.
Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to crowbar this in and hope this is still all right, because we discussed this before. So on the back of this episode, we're going to give away 2 books. Am I still all right in saying that?
Absolutely.
I've said it already.
I'll just bill you later, Rob.
Okay, again, the second thing I'm going to wing. So what I've thought, after reading sections of the book already, at the back, you've got a hashtag, which is McCaw Method Book. Is that correct?
Correct.
So on the back of this episode, in the comments below on Twitter, let's go on Twitter, eh? On Twitter, put the hashtag McCaw Method Book. And we'll run that for 2 weeks. So this episode, obviously recorded beforehand, but we'll go out on the 23rd of June, which is next week for us too. And we'll run that for 2 weeks. So that'll expire on the 7th of July. So hashtag McCaw Method Book. And then I will leave it up to you to pick 2 at random to receive the book. Is that right? Is that okay?
Awesome. Yep.
Just winged it. Winged it.
Perfect.
Perfect. So I'll remind everyone at the end as well. So the first thing I wanted to get into, which is one of the opening chapters of the book, is standards. So you just want to talk to us a little bit about, firstly, what that chapter entails and your standards, maybe.
Well, I mean, I believe it all starts with your standards, not just as a coach, but as a person, your values, your principles, the things that you live by, because the greatest example of a coach is, or the greatest example we can give is what we're doing in our daily lives, because our athletes and our players are watching us first. You know, they're not going to remember the words you said, but they're going to remember how you made them feel and what you did. So, we look at all the successful programs run around the world. For example, the San Francisco 49ers under Bill Welch. We look at UCLA under Coach John Wooden. We look at Manchester United under Sir Alex Ferguson. And you see that all these coaches had incredibly high standards, not just high standards for their teams or for their environments, but they had high standards for themselves. They led by example. And this is one of the messages that it's so important to get out there to coaches, is that you can be the smartest, most knowledgeable person out there, or you might even be the best at marketing yourself. But it's your standards that are going to be the foundation of how successful you're going to be in this business. That is where it starts. And in the book, I discuss the 3 standards. First of all, the standards you keep for yourself. Second of all, the standards you have for your team. That can be your staff that work for you, for example. The people that you work with at your academy or your club. And the third standard is for the athletes that you train. Now, standards is another way of saying rules, but I find the word standards is more of an acceptable, and people take that on easier when you have a set of standards and instead of a set of rules, because nobody likes to be told what to do. So, for example, the standards I keep for the athletes, I've actually listed them in the book. There's 17 of them, and those are standards from dress code, body language, preparation, being on time, cleaning up the facilities after you leave them, our communication, how we talk to each other, how we let others finish sentences, all these small little things that add up to a much more positive environment and a higher standard. And those are the things over a period of time start to bring success to a team or to a group of people.
So do you go into the standards that you set for yourself? And if you do, what are they?
Standards I set for myself are obviously in my daily routines, which I've also included in the book. So, for example, the time I get up. I believe great coaches get up early. They're not sleeping in until 9, 10, 11 o'clock, whatever. I might be being a little bit judgmental in certain areas on the podcast today, and I apologize if I hurt anybody's feelings. But it really does come down to getting out of bed in the morning. I have what I call – I want to be great. And what does that great stand for? The G stands for getting up and having gratitude, number one. The R stands for doing some reading or research. The E stands for exercise. The A stands for attitude. And the T stands for thoughtfulness. And those are the five things that I want to get in place when I stand up in the morning, when I get out of bed in the morning. So the standards I have for myself in the day are obviously come down to my routines, where they're planned, where I get up at the same time, I reply my emails, I have breakfast at the same time, call me boring, I leave for work at the same time, I see athletes between 9 and 12, between 12 and 2 I have my lunch, I reply back emails, phone calls, and then I have a nap in the afternoon before I go back to work again. And so those are the standards I keep daily. I read every day. I take care of my nutrition. I exercise each day. And those are the examples and standards that I show to my fellow colleagues and the athletes I work with.
Mm-hmm. Firstly, don't worry about pissing anyone off. We had Kelvin Giles on a couple of episodes ago, and I think that was took care of that one, which was great.
I really enjoyed that show. Yeah. That's, especially the sports science comments. I love that one. So good job, Kevin.
Yeah. So one thing, just talking about the kind of standards, something that I came across, which is just going off on a tangent a little bit, was a guy called James Clear. Have you heard of James Clear?
I have heard of James Clear, yep.
Excellent. So he does an integrity report. So he released on, I think, about 2 weeks ago, his My 2016 Integrity Report, which I thought was excellent and comes on to kind of fits in what you're talking about with standards. Okay. So I'm seeing on my screen here. So he's got the three main questions that I will answer in this integrity report. What are my core values that drive my life and work? How am I living and working with integrity right now? And how can I get to a higher standard in the future? And I think something like that and going through that process, as obviously you've done, is critical. Have you always done that? Or is that a kind of something that's relatively recent that you've been really conscious of, or have you kind of always gone through that process of assessing how you live in your life?
I would say I've always been like that, and it's something that, you know, from a young age I was always driven to do well in sport. I wasn't the most enthusiastic guy about going to school, but being brought up in South Africa, you know, we'd get up before school and go out and train. So, for example, I'd go out and run or ride. I'd be at school at 7:30, finish 1:30, then there'd be structured practices afterwards. So I was always brought up with structure and routine, and, of course, with getting up early in the morning. So, yeah, I would say the foundations definitely started at a very young age. You know, I was delivering newspapers at 5 o'clock in the morning before going to practice or before going to gym. And that's when I was young as, say, 12, 13 years old. So I'd definitely say I'd rooted the discipline of doing those things and having structure from a young age. And that's why, you know, when I sit down with parents, I always discuss the importance of having routines set out for their kids, because that's not only helping them get further in their school or in their sport, but later on in life, which is the most important thing. And those are the things we want to coach as coaches and teach. It's not just about coaching a sport. It's about developing life skills for later on, because a sports career can be very short, but a lifetime is is, you know, if we're lucky, 80, 90 years, 100 years, if we're lucky.
So how do you go about, obviously you mentioned not calling it rules, but calling it standards. How do you communicate that with different age groups? And it's something you go into in the book, is dealing with this generation. How would you go about in communicating them standards to maybe someone who's 12 or 13 years old, or someone that's 30, 35 years old?
Sure. Okay. Well, most of the programs are obviously junior athletes. So before any junior player or athlete joins my program, we're going to sit down with the parents first of all and discuss how things are done around here. Because this is, you know, I don't want to sound bashful here, but this is our house. And this is how things are done here. You know, just for example, if, you know, if I was to come around to your place, or vice versa, you know, and there was kids involved, you'd say, listen, there's no running around here. This is how we do things here. We clear the table, et cetera, et cetera. And you've got to have those standards and those things set out from day one. So first of all, the parents are brought in and they have to agree with it. Then those standards are relayed to the kids. Now, yeah, absolutely. You know, relaying standards of to a 10-year-old and a 25-year-old are completely different. They're going to take on that information differently. And today what we're dealing with is what we call the IY generation, that generation that's been born with the internet. So information is given to – they receive information differently to say how we did 20, 30 years ago. So it's important that – I'll give you an example. I will get a better response – probably from tweeting or texting the standards to one of my players than me sitting down to tell them what the standards are. This generation, I believe this generation are more of a visual generation than an auditory generation if we're looking at the learning styles. And they need quick, short excerpts of information. So, you know, we've heard the term of being like a Twitter coach. Get your message across in less than 3 lines or less than 20 seconds. That information is going to be taken on better than you, for example, giving out a whole list of things in a whole essay. Now, the standards I have, as I mentioned, I have 17 standards, and you might think, wow, that's a lot of standards. That is also documented on, let's call it a contract. So before I start with a player, they're going to sign a contract. Because this is the thing, what I see is so many coaches, academies, clubs, teams, whatever, are so busy to get into the work, to get out onto the field, to get onto the court, to get onto the track, and the standards or rules, if you like, aren't explained and agreed upon from day one. And that's where problems come along later down the line.
Mm-hmm. So how does that communicating of standards with different generations almost, how does that stay the same actual coaching itself when obviously you're not going to sit at the side of the room and send a tweet to a 12-year-old that's under the, you know, a bar doing a squat, but does your communication when coaching change with different age groups, and how does it change?
It does. Well, I mean, the way I do it, I have two presentations. I have a presentation for my junior athletes below the age of 14, and I have a presentation for the athletes above 15 years of age. And we basically sit down probably once every 8 weeks, I think it is. It's a 20-minute presentation where we go through the standards. And what I've done, instead of like making it more like a classroom setting, it's more of like a group discussion of how we feel our standards are progressing. So it's a type of a tactic I use to come in from another side, if I can say, instead of saying, right, we're sitting down to discuss the 17 standards. We go through them and see how we are progressing or how we could do better as a group to improve those standards. So, you know, for example, the 14 and under presentation has a little bit of fun characters in it. You know, it has one or two things of Justin Bieber, et cetera, to keep the interest there, for example. So, you know, what I'm doing is I'm relating to the generation I'm working with. So they're going to be open up their ears. They're keen to listen instead of putting them through some boring lecture or essay. So that's how I bring those standards across to the athletes I work with.
Mm-hmm. So just moving on to another chapter in the book, which is, I'm making this up, which involves creating an identity. So I just want to kind of hit that.
Method.
Method, correct. So I just want to kind of hit that from the kind of coach's point of view and how a young coach or even a seasoned coach would develop this identity and kind of be open enough to have it kind of molded as you go along. What's the first step of getting something down after so many coaching years or coaching sessions and going, this is actually what I believe, this is what I think, and this is the framework that I'm going to use? What would be the first step for someone to go about that?
I think it's very important. You know, I believe as a coach that you need an identity. You need a method or a philosophy or a system documented. It's something that describes how you operate as a coach, and that can be in certain areas. For example, your standards, the way you coach, the drills, the exercises you use. For example, you have a documented system or a method in place, and basically what that's about is, I mean, if you don't have a method, it's pretty simple. You're just going to sit down and write down what you believe in and what you feel works. And that's how you start developing your method or your system. And the more you go along and learn, there might be some things that fall off that list that you no longer believe in, but you found something better or a better way to do something, for example. So, you know, even after 22 years of coaching, I'm still developing my method. I always feel I will be, even if I'm 40 years old, or should I say 40 years or 50 years in the industry. As long as I keep learning, my method or my system or my philosophy is going to keep changing. Now, that doesn't mean it's chopping and changing every week or every month. It's when I've just basically found something better than what or the way I was doing it. So that's how you would document a method.
Is that something that you have done? Obviously, you've been around for a long time in the coaching, but How far into your coaching, journey did that get documented actually down on paper?
Probably only around about halfway, to be honest. You know, obviously you have your favorite go-to exercises and you have the way you do things. But I'd probably even say it was around about, say, 10, 11 years ago where I actually sat down for the first time and documented what I believed in. My core principles, my standards, and obviously the best way I felt was to develop an athlete and work with athletes. So that's basically where I started, probably about 11, 10 years ago. And if I had to look back at how my system and my philosophy has changed over those 10 years, it's quite a lot. It's a pretty big change. But that happened very, very minutely. I mean, it's like, for example, losing weight over a period of time. You don't really see it, but all of a sudden you see after a period of time that you've lost that weight. The same goes for your method or your philosophy, where, you know, you've changed things over a period of time, and before you know it, you look back at 10 years ago and you think to yourself, wow, I can't believe I actually did that with athletes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose if you look back and thought, oh, I was all right, I'll keep doing that, I suppose that's pretty an indication that maybe things haven't moved on when they should have done.
Exactly. And I mean, just like Mike Boyle says as well, you know, if you're still running the same program that you did 10 years ago, you're either a genius or you stink. And that pretty much comes down to, you know, if you're not changing, you're not evolving, that means you're not learning. You've got a problem as a coach, because things are changing. There's, you know, sports science is improving. You know, we've just things are happening a lot faster. But here's our biggest challenge as coaches, is that we have now got to sift out the good stuff from the bad stuff. And that also includes where we're receiving that information from, the coaches or these people we might follow on social media, for example. I mean, it's quite tough to tell who's legit and who's not right now. I mean, obviously we know, you know, the really good ones, for example, and of course there's maybe too many to mention, but because they've proven it over time, or you've heard them speak, or you've watched them multiple times, or whatever it may be. But that's becoming our biggest challenge today as coaches, is who's legit and who's not, because there's so many good marketers out there that are marketing themselves on social media.
I think this could be valuable. How do you filter the, I think I was going to say the shit, but that's probably a bit harsh. But how do you filter the stuff that you want to see and the stuff that you don't particularly want to see and don't particularly believe in?
I feel to become an expert in any area, you've got to have at least 20 years experience in it. And I'm not saying that because I'm sitting here saying, well, I've got 22 years experience. I don't see myself an expert at all. I see myself as a learner. Because to me, expert is type of a term that's finished. I'm a lifelong learner, so I'm continually always going to be learning, and I never see myself as that finished product or that expert. But how? That's a good question. How do I see who's legit and who's not? I think it just over a period of time, you know, you can see who's the real deal and who's not, who they've worked with, how long they've been around, who else credits them. Are they also accredited coaches, really good coaches that have been in the business for a long time? That's probably the best way I decipher who's legit and who's not. I'm very skeptical of somebody that's you know, putting out these articles or putting out these pieces, but they've really coached no one, or they're probably coaching no one at the moment either. So I'm always very skeptical about those type of coaches, because there's a lot of smart, knowledgeable people in our industry, but it comes down to putting in the grunt work, working in the trenches and putting in those hours in the gym, on the field or the track or whatever it may be.
Next one, which was, I wanted to touch on, which was fundamentals. And this may be a little bit more kind of hardcore training talk, but how do you define your fundamentals? And what would you, how do you define them, and what are they?
Fundamentals to me are the most important thing in a training program. And here's another area, just jumping back to our previous question, where can see the quality coaches from the non-quality coaches, is their relationship with the fundamentals. Great coaches are locked in. They stick to the fundamentals. They apply the fundamentals. They learn the fundamentals. They don't get bored with the fundamentals. And the fundamentals are basically the basics of the sport. And what you find in a lot of cases is especially these days, the coaches that are not in a great relationship with the fundamentals, they get bored quickly and they like to change things. And I can tell you right now that there's been no world-class athlete I've worked with that hasn't been well coached and trained in the fundamentals as a young athlete. I believe you cannot reach the world stage in a sport or a different industry for that matter if you haven't been taught well in the fundamentals. And those fundamentals are all obviously, you know, I've spent time around great coaches like Nick Bollettieri, who's worked with 10 number ones in the world here in Florida. And what struck me about him is that there is nothing flashy. It is just the good old fundamentals each lesson. It doesn't matter who he's working with, be it a 10-year-old or be it an Andre Agassi or a top player that comes onto the court. Same thing goes along with David Ledbetter, the famous golf coach who's worked with Nick Faldo and numerous major champions. I worked with an LPGA golfer here in Florida where I observed some of his sessions as well. And same thing, nothing flashy, just those good old fundamentals. And, you know, there's so many distractions and all these programs and all these well-marketed things on the internet, on YouTube. And these guys are making money. And we're just not seeing the light of that. It's that the fundamentals are the most important thing in developing an athlete.
So you've obviously got vast experience of working in tennis. So let's just take that as an example. How would you go about assessing that sport and that individual to figure out what them fundamentals are?
Well, obviously, To build a great player, you first of all need to develop a great athlete. So I want to make sure that athlete is developed in the best way possible, and that is my job as an athlete development coach or a sports performance coach, whatever you want to name it. So posture, which is all movement starts with posture. That needs to be a fundamental. How are they in that start position, or how are they in that ready position for a return a serve, for example, or even before we start a footwork drill or a movement drill, are they in a good athletic stance? Are they in that good shape that I'm looking for? What else? Do they their running technique, for example? One thing I always tell coaches is, if you don't know the fundamentals in teaching an athlete how to run properly, then take them to a track and field coach or someone who understands the biomechanics and get that fundamental right first. Because how can we expect that player to move on the field or on the court if they don't know how to run properly in the first place? So that would be two examples of where my starting fundamentals would be with regards the setup of an athlete is good athletic stance, good posture, good running technique. That is where it starts. And then from there, we develop and we progress into all the other areas that help them move more specific and better in the sport. So, for example, in tennis, we need to move off both sides. So we're going to be developing strength off both the left and right leg, for example. So, those are the progressions we'd take. And then obviously the fundamentals in the specific sport, that would be on the tennis coach or the golf instructor or whatever sport they would be involved in.
In tennis, there seems a really big kind of connect between the technical coaches and the athletic performance coach or whatever you want to call it. So how much say do you get in the kind of intricacies of their kind of on-court movement, which you maybe wouldn't get in the intricacies of how a right back moves up and down the right side in football? You know, how in depth do you go in conjunction with the coach?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously it's maybe a little different for me because I've been in it so long and I feel I'm a pretty well-respected coach in this specific area. So coaches always feel comfortable with me being on the court with him and speaking my mind and coming in where I will, as where you find in some cases, for example, a younger coach or a coach that's maybe not as well known, they don't really have much as a say during the specific coaching session, be it on the field or be it on the court, for example. So for me, it's a little different, Rob. I'm pretty much present even at their training sessions, their tennis sessions, which is not so much the case in our industry, you know, where the physical trainer wouldn't be on the court at the tennis practice. He'd only be present when it was, let's call it that, his session, in the gym or on the track, for example. For me, it's different. I'm present throughout the whole day during their morning session, their warming up session, on court time, gym time, and if there's another session later on in the day.
Nice. So one thing I want to touch on before I let you go is interpersonal skills. And I kind of like this topic, and it's kind of something that's been touched on a lot in previous podcasts. Maybe I'm trying to cover up my simple mind, but do you want to talk about maybe the chapter that's in the book on interpersonal skills and obviously the importance of that? I don't really get bored of talking about this, and I hope other people don't as well, because I think it's such an important aspect of being a coach, of being a person, being able to actually speak to people and connect with people. So you just want to talk to us a little bit about your chapter on interpersonal skills.
Sure. Well, I think where we can start is that the most important thing as a coach is to have the respect of the athlete. But another important area is that your best ability is going to be your likability. The coach, or should I say, the athlete is going to like working with you and like spending time with you. Especially when you're working on the professional tour or you're working with elite athletes, you're spending more time off the court or out of the gym or away from the playing arena than you are actually on it. So you've got to be able to get along. And, you know, it comes also down to that area. It's not so much how much you know, it's who you know. And, you know, if you get along with people, you keep in contact, you're liked, you're going to have a bigger chance of succeeding in the sports industry and coaching world. That is a guarantee. Because the bottom line is nobody wants to work with a jerk. That's exactly how it is. It's true.
Yeah.
And, you know, another thing is that your athletes want to know you care as well as a coach. That's probably the most important thing. They want to know that you care for them, at first of all, as a person and then as a player. So, you know, interpersonal skills. I've always said that great coaching is 80% your interpersonal skills and 20% your knowledge, your X's and O's, for example. That's how big the difference is. I'll be honest with you. I've seen a lot of great coaches out there that are not maybe the most knowledgeable or the most smartest or probably the most scientific. I might have to maybe put myself into that category, for example. However, they're able to adapt. They're able to adapt and adjust to the athlete they're working with, and that is the big difference. And also in the book, you know, there's a chapter about adapting to the athlete, how important that is. And you know, I'll give an example. I've worked with athletes from all over the globe, from Egypt, from Russia, United States, and they all come from a completely different cultural background. And they all have different personalities on top of that. And I've worked with some athletes that are known as bad boys. I've worked with some athletes who are known as nerds, you know, all this type of thing. And I'm able to adapt to each athlete and find commonalities with them. Because some people have said to me, how have you been able to work with this guy and then go and work with that guy? They're two completely different people. And I said, it's the ability to adapt and adjust. And, you know, because I'm able to find commonalities, I show an interest in who they are. I learn their hobbies. I learn what food they like to eat, what music they like to listen to. And I create a relationship with them away from the court, away from the gym. And that is how you build up that trust and that integrity with your athlete.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So for someone who's kind of maybe feels they struggle in this area, what is the first port of call for someone like that, that feels that this is an area they need to develop? Is it just getting out there and kind of almost forcing things? How would you kind of give advice on that?
You know, well, this is probably going to be simple advice, but just be a nicer person.
Yeah. Don't be a dick.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just, yeah. Well, like in James Kerr's book, the Legacy, don't be a dickhead. And that pretty much what I think that's the worst word I've ever said on a podcast.
It's fine. It's rule number one. Everyone knows it's rule number one. Yeah. Okay.
You see, I've lost one of my standards there.
Yeah.
Of,
sorry, mate.
Bad language. But anyway.
Bleep that out. I'll bleep it out.
It comes down to that of just being a nice person. And if you need help in that area, I mean, there's a lot of self-help books that can help you. And here's another thing is that invest in the areas that you need better help in and attention in. You've got to close that aperture. What is an aperture? It's where you are right now to where you want to be. And if one of those areas you need to work on is your likability or your interpersonal skills, then enroll for a course or go find a conference where they're working on interpersonal skills, for example. There's so many ways that you can get better at this. Don't just be looking for the conferences and the courses where you're learning X's and O's and drills and skills. Maybe the most important skill you need to work on is your interpersonal skills.
Absolutely. Completely agree. So just to round things up, where can people get their hands on the book?
US buyers can get that from my website, which is mccallmethod.com, pretty simple. And international buyers, or should I say worldwide, can get it off amazon.com.
Okay. And where can people keep in touch with you and what you've got going on?
I think probably my favorite one, Rob, as you know, is on Twitter. Yeah. At Alistair McCaw. That's the most easiest one. I mean, I find Twitter just one of the best social media forms there is out there, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, yes, last but not least, 23rd of June, this episode will go out. Hashtag McCall Method Book below the, in the comments below the episode, with a chance to win, a book from yourself. I'll finish on that one. So thank you very much for your time, Alistair. Obviously wish you all the best with the book, and we'll catch up soon.
Awesome. I really appreciate your time. Thanks, Rob.
Pleasure, mate. See you later.
Yep. Bye.
All right, bye. Thanks for tuning in to episode 90 of the Pacey Performance Podcast. If you go to paceyperformance.co.uk/90, all the links that are mentioned in the episode, you can find on there. So where you can get Alistair's book if you are a US citizen or if you're based outside the US. Second thing is massive thanks to the sponsors, Val Performance and Train With Push. And as I mentioned in the intro, Train With Push are presenting a series of seminars and workshops with Dan Baker. So if you are interested in hearing Dan speak, if you're based in the US, go to paceyperformance.co.uk/90, and all the links are on there with regards to how you go about booking. And don't forget, hashtag McCall Method Book will enter you into the prize draw to get a free book courtesy of Mr. McCall and the McCall Method. So thanks again for tuning in. Again, would really appreciate your feedback, and I'll speak to you soon.